Welcome to Beach, Books and Beyond, a series where I invite different guests from different walks of life to talk to me about books that have influenced them, books they recommend, and books they suggest we take to the beach this summer. You've no excuse not to be well read this summer. Join me, Monique Chambers, on Beach, Books and Beyond, here on Campus FM. Welcome to this week's edition of Beach, Books and Beyond, a new series talking about books, how they've changed people's lives, and what books we recommend you take to the beach. This first week, my guest is Chris Gruppetta of Merlin Publishers. He knows a thing or two about books, and you read quite a bit too.
Quite a bit, yes. Hi, Monique. Thanks for the invite.
How quickly do you get through a book, or does it depend on...
It depends. Last year or a couple of years back, I started keeping one of these book diaries, kind of, which is, you know, felt a bit weird, but it's just... And I'm at around 60-something per year.
Wow, okay, so more than one a week, you're...
I mean, and that's, you know, because obviously my job involves reading, among other things. So obviously then I have these whole rules with myself, you know, mm-hmm. these geeky things, kind of, so I don't count the books I read for work.
Okay, so there's more.
But that's obviously part of my work if I'm reading manuscripts, editing manuscripts, which means rereading the same manuscript over and over. Uh-huh. So let's not count those kind of things.
And what about, are you good at, you know, you start to read a book and it's just not your thing. How do you...
We're starting off on a toughy one. basically, I'm really reluctant to let a book go, mm-hmm. and it's kind of, okay, let me stick, you know, try and get through it. But then, a few years back, a friend of mine, I'm a book lover, told me, you know, life is too short for
bad books.
So I kind of try to keep that in mind. And if I'm really struggling, I'm really not enjoying it, you know, this is meant to be fun, mm-hmm. I'm meant to be enjoying it, and I will... Occasionally, please note the use of the word occasionally, mm-hmm. Push a book aside.
Do you go back to them, or do you flick a few pages before you've done that, or do you just like, no, it's going down?
No. I wouldn't do that before I start reading it. I'd start and then I'd say, okay, let me give it a few more pages. Maybe it's one of those, you know, slow starters. Uh-huh. But then at a certain point, you know, I'd give up. I mean, the intention is always, okay, maybe I'll come back to it when I'm more in the mood. But there's always so much. To read.
New stuff to read.
So, you know, they always end up in the guest room.
Do you read one book at a time, or do you have a...
No.
No, okay.
No. Plenty of books at the same time, so, you know...
Never get anybody mixed up? What's he doing there?
Well, if I stop, you know, for a while on one book and then I try to go back to it, I do find myself kind of having to do a kind of refresh, a quick refresh of kind of who's who and why is he with that one, or why is that one dead, or what happened. So, but on the whole, no, they do stay.
That could be quite an interesting experiment to do, you know, page of one, page of
yeah,
one.
Yeah, okay, that's not sure. I also switch formats. So, you know, in the car, I listen to a lot of audiobooks.
Okay.
Because obviously I found that, I know we've discussed this in the mm-hmm. past, it's a brilliant way of, you know, getting past traffic and uh-huh. instead of getting just irritated at the whole, you know, traffic situation, just listen to audiobooks.
That's true. I love audiobooks.
So there's, you know, then there's reading on Kindle, reading uh-huh. in print, so, you know.
So do you like, do you do Kindle at night and books by day?
Yeah, or Kindle is, you know, convenient uh-huh. either at night because you don't wake anyone up at night, or if I'm traveling, or uh-huh. just take one with you.
It must be a nightmare otherwise if you travel a lot.
Exactly. And especially if you're not sure if you're going to be in the mood, because I'm a bit moody in that respect. Uh-huh. I'm not sure if I'm going to be in the mood for a kind of light whodunit kind mm-hmm. of thing, or something a bit meatier. So, you know, just stuff everything in the Kindle and then
now, how do you feel about, obviously you're a book lover, but do you ever watch the TV program or the film of a book instead of the book? Is that anything you ever do?
Instead of, I'm not sure. I think I would count that as... cheating. I would. After, yes, sometimes. I mean, I'm one of those who obviously just goes, the book was better. But I might sometimes. Other times, if I really enjoyed the book, I might not want to risk it. Kind of. So, for example, I haven't watched Handmaid's Tale uh-huh. yet, the series, because I'm a bit scared to do that. You know, if, I know people are saying it's very good, but, you know, what if it isn't? That kind of thing.
Yeah, and if the character doesn't look how you've imagined him, it's just
exactly.
wrong
that's,
from the beginning.
You know, that's really one of the, I find one of the powerful things about literature, because you create these, even if there's a description, sometimes you create your own character in, you know, in your mind, and then if the TV series or the movie is good enough, then it's, you know, like with Andrea Camilleri's Montalbano.
Okay.
Montalbano now is Zingaretti, the actor.
Yes.
But, you know, in the initial Camilleri novels, he actually, even the physical description in the book was very different.
To how he ended up on screen.
Interestingly, then the author himself starts to shift the physical description in the book to match the actor, but that's one of those.
Because then once you've seen him and heard him.
Yes, exactly. And if he's popular enough, then it is.
He's right.
Exactly. Then that's.
The
he's
customer's
the one.
Always right.
Exactly.
The customer's always right. So, what sort of books are you reading this week?
Well, not necessarily this week, but one of the books I've been really, really raving about. It's one of those, you know, chance finds in a bookshop, and it's called The Seven Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle. Not necessarily one of the, you know, I really enjoy it when I find one of these books. It's not one of the, you know, the top, in the bestseller list, because that's, okay, those are great. And
but you almost have read them before they're
exactly.
out, sort of.
So this was, you know, totally, you know, just not to mix metaphors, closed book, you know, just found it there. I was intrigued by the cover, and it's kind of, you know, when they do these blurbs saying this meets that, you know, different.
Okay,
And but this is, it was a real case. The blurb read, and I think it was really accurate. It said, Murder on the Orient Express meets Groundhog Day, meets Gosford Park. So it was, that was enough to kind of, exactly, I had the same reaction. Three okays, three books, movies that I kind of enjoyed. And it is this kind of thing, it's this, you know, English manor, secluded manor, you've got a party, and one of the guests is going to be murdered by the end of day. And our hero has to, obviously, try and solve the murder, but the twist is that he keeps waking up, there's this kind of supernatural thing, whatever you call it. He keeps waking up every day on the same day, reliving the same situation, almost like Cluedo the game in a way, and every day this the hero, the character, is finds himself in the body of a different guest. So it's really, it sounds really weird but intriguing, but amazingly enough the author makes it work. It just works. You start thinking, same reaction, kind of.
Like it's radio, you can't see my face.
But I had this first reaction, kind of, okay, am I going to be in the notebook while reading this to keep track? But it works. And each time, obviously, you uncover something else because you're looking at it from a different point of view. And obviously, you don't, you know who, initially, you don't even know who's going to be murdered, then who's the murderer, then if one of the people, you know. It's weird, but the good kind of weird.
So the title of that again, I'm going to have
The Seven Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle.
Okay.
It's I really, really enjoyed it, as I said. So I thought that was really a great read.
And is it normally sort of murder mystery type things that you like? Or do you do a bit of everything?
That's my kind of comfort. Not this kind of...
the murder
mystery. Yeah, exactly. I like You know, I grew up first with Agatha Christie, then with P.D. James, and I read all her works, you know. So I like that kind of, you know, the kind of... not necessarily the cozy mysteries, but the ones, you know, with a kind of secluded either room or island, or some might happen, I don't know, on an ocean liner or on a plane, where, you know, we've got a definite cast of characters, no one can get away, so the murder has to be one of them. That's kind of Agatha Christie thing, so I like that kind of thing.
And the sort of mystery surrounding it,
yes,
and
exactly.
Digging out the reasons why.
I mean, I read almost anything apart from things like horror, which aren't really my thing, but I enjoy, you know, my comfort reads are kind of these kind of whodunits, and I enjoy trying to, you know, to see if I can guess, or as even I enjoy being surprised when I haven't guessed and say, oh, it was right there in front of my eyes, I just didn't.
You never cheat, you never sort of flick and say, yes, he got from the end.
No, because that would ruin not because I'm too good for it, just because it would then ruin the fun.
But sometimes, you know when you're watching TV and you know, and you just want to tell them, oh, for goodness sake, it's them.
Oh yes, no, then that's it. Yeah, that's part of the fun in a way, and you just hope you're not wrong.
Yes, because then if they put one of those twists.
Yeah, exactly. Then you're like, you got me there. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. No, we don't like this.
So what else have you read recently then that you think is a good feature?
So, there's another book, it's called How to Stop Time, which I know this seems like there's a theme going to them, but, you know, time there isn't. The author is Matt Haig. He writes these kind of very easy to read, enjoyable books, but they always have some kind of different twist. And this one, How to Stop Time, there's this teacher, basically, this guy in his 40s, who we find out doesn't die. Or at least has a almost, you know, has lived hundreds of years. But it's not a sci-fi book, so it's kind of, it's a very personal book in a way, because it tackles the human aspect of this guy not being able to form relationships, because obviously he realizes that, you know, other people he's going to fall in love with and care about are going to die, whereas he's not. Yeah. And every few years he needs to relocate to a different, you know, continent possibly, because otherwise people will get to know him. And now that it's in the 21st century, there's things like Facebook and there's a digital record, whereas in the past, you know, there were no photos, you know, at the most you just have to make sure you didn't sit for a painting, whereas nowadays you've got, you know, mobile phones Instagram and everything, so as to be careful. So it was an enjoyable read. It was recommended by a friend. I'd recommend it as a kind of, you know, summer
light and easy.
It's
I just want to know how that one ends, actually, don't you? That's
I won't say that. Spoiler spot. Other books. I also read sometimes some YA, young adult fiction, which I do it partly for work, but partly because I find a lot of young adult fiction can appeal to adults as well. And in fact,
you have children, don't you?
Yes, but they're much younger, eight and ten. Not in the young adult
territory. But you know what's coming to you.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of reading ahead. But also, I mean, even, you know, from the business aspect, in the last kind of 10, 15 years, the publishing industry has kind of, if you want to be cynical, created the young adult category as a way of appealing to adults and encourage them to read children's books without kind of the stigma of being, oh, he's reading children's book. You know, it all starts with Harry Potter, Philip Pullman. So there's this whole category of young adult books that appeal to teenagers, young adults, but, you know, at least I'm not a teenager by any stretch of the imagination.
Just in your own imagination.
Yeah, exactly. In my imagination, I might well be. And there's this author, John Green,
yes,
who you, of course, would have heard of The Fault in Our Stars, which was a few years back, and it was made into a movie. It was a lovely but sad book. Uh-huh. And he's got a new book out. It was out last year. It's called Turtles All the Way Down.
Okay.
Which Green's books are always about, that's why they're very popular with teenagers, because they're always in a way about either relationships and, you know, problems that teenagers go through. But this particular one, it tackled this girl, the protagonist, being a bit different. But what I found interesting was that usually, especially in young adult fiction, different is either different sexual orientation or some kind of serious disability that, you know, we've seen it in movies and books, something, you know, really, you know, politically correct and big that gets a discussion going. In this case, it was a kind of difference, if you'll pardon the pun.
Just her personality.
She had these phobias, kind of. She had this phobia about germs.
Okay.
Which is, you know, very specific, but it was kind of, it's not something, you know, massive in that there was no disability involved, but she had this, you know, really big phobia.
Sort of.
Exactly. Ah. And it was affecting her. So, for example, she was scared of getting into a relationship because the moment she kissed the guy, she was worrying. She Googled about how many millions of germs and, you know, cells pass from one person to another's mouth. And she said, okay, she Googled about this really rare case of some kind of bacteria that could, you know, get into someone's immune system and prove fatal in a 1 in a billion case. And she got all paranoid about this thing. So, but what I found interesting was that it kind of showed kind of how something silly to any one of us who don't, you know, have something like that can, ruin a person's kind of feeling normal. And, you know, they ruin this person's possibility of, you know, getting into relationships. They could ruin friendships because, you know, friends get bored, you know, listening to your friend constantly in the canteen talking about germs and what, you know, this new germ of Googled, kind of, that kind of thing.
It could be a whole fun thing, though, actually, you know, instead of following germs.
Yeah, it could be kind of...
But no, it's true, there's a lot of issues addressed. A girlfriend of mine, her daughter actually recommends me books. She has a 14-year-old daughter, and she recommends me, you know, and I'm always really astonished at how grown up and how deep some of the books are.
They are.
And I'm like, wow, I wish these were around when I was a teenager.
Seriously, I have the same kind of...
She's so lucky to be able to address stuff, you know.
Exactly, and there's so much that, you know, as you're saying, makes, you know, lucky.
Were just like, oh, get over yourself.
Exactly.
You know, do your homework and eat your supper.
No,
there's... But there's all this stuff explored.
There's a lot. And it's really, I find the young adult fiction fascinating for these reasons. So sometimes, not too much, but occasionally I do read a book here and there, a young adult book here and there.
Do you buy books in bulk? Do you have like, you know, there's a whole new load come out and you just bang, 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 you buy
No, I try to resist that.
Okay.
But obviously then what I do then, especially when I'm traveling, you know, I always end up in bookshops and, you know, I always say, okay, this Chris, you have too many books still to be read, kind of, let's, you know, but then I'm going, oh, yes, I have to read this. Ooh, there's this as well. Ooh, they have a 3-4-2, so might as well, you know. So
they are evil, those 3-4-2s.
Yes, exactly. I'm really, obviously, because of work, I'm into book covers as well. Mm-hmm. So obviously, when I see a nice book cover, then I can't resist. I'm a sucker for
that. You can't judge a book by its cover, though, Chris.
No, but we do, don't we?
No, it's true. You see a color, you see a typeface or something.
Yeah, then I kind of force myself to, you know, get myself to like it. I mean, I have been known not to buy a book that I'm sure I'd like just because I really don't like the typeface inside or the cover. I'll get a bit weird.
You get like that. Yeah, yeah, no, that's in me. Yeah,
no, that's a bit weird, I know.
But no, it's true, if I saw something probably lime green, I probably wouldn't pick it up.
You know, that kind of thing. Yeah. Sometimes then it's kind of trying to find excuses with yourself. Oh, no, there's so many books to choose from. I'll leave this for a later date.
And do you have any other sort of genres that you read as a hobbyist, because obviously having to read all the time is...
Yeah, but having to read aside, I read pretty much everything except for horror and or the really hardcore sci-fi kind of things where there's too many. I enjoy fantasy and, you know, magic or time travel I really enjoy.
Love time.
Yeah, I love that. I love it. And it's one of the...
It's what I want to do when I grow up.
Okay.
Oh,
good luck. Yeah. Let me know. Come back and say hi. If you manage to do that. But the hardcore sci-fi where there's so many new names for everything and different planets and names that aren't names of... You know,
it
could
too,
be laziness on my part, but that kind of puts me off. So unless I'm reading them for work, I don't.
Yeah.
I don't read much non-fiction.
Not biographies and things, you're not really into any of that?
No, really, really rarely, but mostly I enjoy fiction. I enjoy it when I know it's very old-fashioned of me, but for me there has to be a plot. There has to be a story.
That's not old-fashioned, that's a good book.
Sorry. Good, thank you. Thank you. Some will disagree with us, but we leave them out the door.
But it's always surprising how there are some terrible books, you know, I'm not going to mention the name of it, that is now a series, and movies, but, you know, with no nothing. And they just make it because that appeals to the masses somehow. That's a bit frightening.
Yes, no, that is frightening. I mean, but, you know, we see that, unfortunately.
Yeah, very often.
And, but for me, there has to be a good, you know, plot and something to keep it forward. And, you know, I enjoy, obviously, I look for great writing, but it can't just be the great writing and endless just writing about nothing.
Do you read books that are written originally in a different language and have been translated? Do you find those?
Yes.
Not necessarily Maltese.
If I can access the original, I'll go for the original. So, obviously with Maltese, English, but also, for example, Italian. I'm a bit slower reading Italian, but I can. So, earlier we mentioned the Montalbano Mysteries. I read those in Sicilian, Italian, not in the English translation. But if not, I have to admit that, well, we all know there's a bit of a stigma with translating literature into English.
Same.
But I kind of, first of all, because if I can't get to the original, that's my only way of. And then there are, as anything else, there are good translations and there are bad translations. So bad translations, you know, are still clear. But I found that with good translations, that, again, it's a cliche to say it, but if you kind of can't feel that it's translation, then I'm fine with it. I'm enjoying it. It's actually giving me, you know, kind of a look into a different culture sometimes. So that's interesting.
I've had a couple that have been translated from Spanish and there's something that just jars and I can't let it go and it just...
No, sometimes there is that and that puts me off.
It's really annoying when so many people speak so many languages that, and, you know, I know sometimes it's difficult to translate a feeling or something, but sometimes it's like, No, that's just so... Yeah.
But there are good translations. There are good translations.
some other books that you like.
Another book I liked recently is, you know, there's loads of books at the moment after the American elections of a couple of years ago. There's loads of books two ways. There's ones that kind of either make fun of Trump or fictionalize a president who's kind of similar to Trump. Mm-hmm. And then there's this other kind of subgenre, if you want to call it that, of what would have been.
Either
there's a William Gibson book coming out later this year of kind of a parallel reality where Hillary Clinton is president.
Okay.
But that isn't out yet, but I'm really curious to read that. Mm-hmm. But then there's loads of other books and even TV series. We're seeing it all the time where there's a female president who kind of shows you a bit what it would have been like,
with
you know, would mm-hmm. you have been still challenged by the uh-huh. far right, by the alt-right, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
But then there was this book by Salman Rushdie's latest called The Golden House.
Okay.
It's golden as in a surname, a Jewish surname.
Okay.
And it's a saga, very much a family saga, like Rushdie likes to write. But it's one of his more accessible books, because in some of them the magical realism can go a bit too far for some.
Yes, uh-huh.
This is one of those meaty, plotty uh-huh. books we were saying earlier. We can get, and there's this kind of family man who could look a bit like Trump. Mm-hmm. He's not into politics, but you know, he's you know, this brash businessman who's kind of bought his way into New York, I think it is, society, and he's got this really dark past, and in his case he's coming he came from India, where there's this really dark past of what he was involved in and why he suddenly uprooted his entire mm-hmm. family to come and live in one of the kind of well-to-do New York mansions, and that's his house, which he calls the Golden House. You know, it's very brash, very much his surname is Golden, you know, think Trump Towers, the Golden House, and everything is emblazoned with their own family, you know. It's very, very Nouveau-ish, exactly, in a purposely exaggerated way. But then there's this kind of mystery and intrigue, because obviously there's this whole backstory about why he uprooted his family, changed their surname, and obviously at some point, without giving too much of the plot away, uh-huh. their past does catch up with them, uh-huh. and it gets even darker at times. Then there's obviously this, you know, because he's obviously, again, hints of Trump, he's obviously very old and not particularly handsome, but he kind of has this, you know, young, very hot wife. Uh-huh. So, you know, there's these echoes, and he's also got then this kind of secret girlfriend on the side who kind of, you know, finds her way into the family. So there's plenty of elements to keep the plot going. I found it to be one of his best in recent years.
Okay.
And it's, you know, because sometimes Rushdie can be a bit difficult to actually enjoy. I mean, you'd enjoy the writing and, you know, everything. But this is, you know, I listened to it as an audiobook, and uh-huh. it, you know, flowed. It really, really flowed.
Okay, maybe one I download for my next set of journeys.
Exactly. It's good, and it's got all these parallels without being too obvious. Uh-huh. So, you know, there isn't an American president. There's this American, he's in the private, you know, industry and business. Uh-huh. But there's all these, you know, echoes and all these things and the backroom deals and, you know, how he's propped up and by whom he's propped up and, yeah.
And all the intricacies behind there.
Exactly.
And have you got any books that you're, you know, on the table next? What are your next ones? Or are there others that you're still reading or have just read that
there's
tell us about?
Plenty on the table. Always is plenty on the table. One book I've just read, I don't know if it's okay to shift into children's books.
Of course.
Just a while,
because love children's books.
And it's actually been out a few years, but mm-hmm. I really, really like this. It's called The Paper Dolls by Julia Donaldson. Julia Donaldson mm-hmm. is known for the Gruffalo, you know, parents, you uh-huh. know, because she calls children obsessed with Gruffalo. But apart from the Gruffalo series, she also writes other picture books. And I like this book, and I really like to recommend it to friends, because although it's, you know, story about paper dolls, about mm-hmm. these children who cut out paper dolls,
uh-huh.
but really, I find it to be a perfect way to talk to children about death or bereavement for anyone who has in some way gone through it, a grandparent, mm-hmm. someone in the family. Sorry to put a bit of a somber note,
but it's
always difficult to talk about these subjects with kids. And this is, there are many books that talk about bereavement and death, but this one, the story is, you know, taken at face value, is not uh-huh. about death. But because it is about these kind of paper dolls and when they're cut out and then they kind of join the great atmosphere, mm-hmm. it's non-denominational, so it doesn't get into religion.
Okay.
So, you know, whatever one's personal beliefs, one can. And I found it a great way of discussing how, you know, how to talk to a child about, you know, okay, so not what happens next. The mm-hmm. person has died, what happens next? And I find it useful. I mean, hopefully, it's one of those books you hope you're never going
to
need.
But I
find it good to know about, you know, and to tell people, you know.
And what about, just while we're on the subject of this kind of thing, so, you know, reading at the beach is great fun. It's like what you're supposed to be, you know, do that, and obviously people watching.
Yeah,
the occasional bit of swimming. But apart from that, you know, it's a good read is what the beach is all about in my case. But is introducing children to books at the beach something, okay, they're going to be running around with their buckets and spades and stuff, but to sort of sit them down and get them to read there so they can associate it not with homework, not with naughty time. It's
absolutely on one condition, I find, that it's a book that either they have chosen or they're going to enjoy.
Okay.
Because if you try, like as anything else with kids, if you try and impose a book, it's just going to backfire. Uh-huh. They're going to be, you know, this is meant to be fun. Mm. But I mean, I've seen it with my kids and I've seen it with, you know, other people's kids. If it's a fun book, especially serious, if there's serious, as just like us watching, you know, series on TV, if there's a character or series of characters they like, they will usually want to go to the next, and then it becomes fun. Mm. So it could be something that they take to the beach, and this kind of, I know there's all these kind of Tom Gates, kind of, and many of these modern day book series that are, you know, fun and about kids getting up to slightly naughtyish
the sort
stuff.
Of not Enid Blyton's butt.
Yeah, kind of Enid Blyton brought to the 21st century.
Yeah, okay, you're trying to say I'm old.
No, I grew up with Enid Blyton. And, you know, actually, small bracket about Enid Blyton. Mm. You know, we all enjoy saying that they're dated, but I find that kids actually enjoy them. Or at least my daughter loves them.
It's that innocence, isn't it, I think? And it really wasn't without mobile phones. It's kind of nice to imagine
and
that life again and climbing trees.
It's lovely. And I used to think kids would not be able to identify because it's without mobile phones, etc. But
they
love it.
Excellent. So I've been talking to Chris Grappetta on this week's edition of Beach Books and Beyond. We'll be talking to him again later in the series, and he'll be telling us about some new books that will be coming out. Join us for that one in a couple of months' time. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us on this week's edition of Beach Books and Beyond. I'd also like to thank Samuel Attard and Carmelo Grett for helping me produce this program. Join us again next week for more book recommendations on Beach Books and Beyond, here on Campus FM.